Like Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. If you hear the term electric bacteria, a lot of images may come to your mind. Some picture a post-apocalyptic scenario where electrified bacteria doom our species to extinction. Luckily for us, though, that is not the case. The reality is more benign and potentially revolutionary. What started as a question about the metal content of a lake in upstate New York evolved into a new field of research that has changed the concept of biofuel and could alter the future of energy production. Dr. Ken Nielsen's team first found electric bacteria in 1987 with the discovery of Shewanella oneidensis, named after Oneida Lake where it was found. Dr. Nielsen will talk about this discovery at the UWM Union tomorrow night, but first he joined LakeEffect's Joy Powers to talk about his work.
I'm going to start the conversation by stating emphatically that I am not a microbiologist. This is all material that's pretty out of, you know, my wheelhouse, but it's such a fascinating story and a fascinating topic. To really start here, what are electric bacteria?
Electric bacteria are I would say they're a rather new finding. Only in the last couple of decades have people realized that bacteria could take the energy from whatever they're eating. Usually they're eating glucose or things, some of the same things we eat, or they're feasting on dead material, different kind, protein, whatever. And instead of turning that energy into ATP to run their bodies, they harvest the energy by harvesting the electrons from whatever they're eating. And instead of using the electron energy, the electric energy, to grow faster, they can use it to export electrons to the outside. And basically, if there's an electrode around or a mineral that will take electrons, they can pass the electrons outside the cell. And 10 or 15 years after these bacteria were discovered, somebody had the sense to put an electrode in the flask, and the bacteria would just transfer their electrons to that electrode, making electricity.
Let me take a step back for a moment. So generally, they're using these electrons, if I'm stating this right, they're using that to grow bigger. But sometimes, instead of doing that, they just export it out of themselves, and then they can pass it on to something else?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the reason that these were discovered is that bacteria were doing something that they shouldn't be able to do, which was they were passing electrons to various minerals in the sediment and dissolving those minerals. And the thing about bacteria is they're designed to keep the electrons inside. But if you can't get rid of the electrons, you just suffocate. And so the way virtually all life works is you extract electrons from whatever you eat. And in our case, we pass those electrons to oxygen. And oxygen, we breathe it in and we breathe out water, which has been reduced by those electrons. So we're no different from the bacteria, except we haven't figured out how to pass those electrons onto an electrode and make energy. So we just pass them to oxygen. If you take the oxygen away from my bacteria, they will suffocate unless there's something else to give the electrons to. And in this case, they were giving the electrons to iron oxides and manganese oxides and completely altering the bottom of a lake.
There were people who were working on this lake, and they realized that something was going on that was atypical. They didn't think that it could be bacteria that was doing this. What made you think that the cause of the changes in this lake were due to bacteria?
Well, that's because I'm a microbiologist, and bacteria have a phenomenal ability to mutate and learn how to do new things if you put a lot of selective pressure on them. And down in these sediments, when they run out of oxygen, but there's all sorts of things that they could use instead of oxygen, except those things turn out to be solids. And bacteria can't take solids up because they're, number one, they're smaller than the solids usually, but number two, the solids can't get through the membranes on the bacteria. So the obvious solution is to pass the electrons to the outside. But back in the late 1980s, textbooks all said this couldn't be done.
So solids in this case, would they be like minerals, rocks, those kinds of things?
Yeah, the solids in this case are, if you would look at the surface of Mars and see all those rocks covered with rust, that would be a good analog of this. Anything that's rusty will be covered with iron oxides, and those iron oxides are far bigger than the bacteria. But they're a great source of oxidizing power, and they are a good oxygen substitute. It's just that it's the way science often works. If the textbooks say it's not possible, then no one tries it. So my geology friends told me about this lake in New York, Lake Oneida, and I spent one summer in the summer of 1987 with a group of students just doing culturing, trying to get to isolate bacteria that would in fact reduce these iron and manganese oxides. And by the end of the summer, we had organisms in culture that could do this perfectly well.
What I think is kind of amazing about this story is not just that, you know, bacteria did something that previously we didn't imagine they could do, but then how we were able to take that information and say, there's a practical purpose for us. And one of the things that you talk about at TED Ed was the idea of microbial fuel cells. How does something like that work?
It's so simple, Joy, that it boggles the mind. Basically, you imagine that the bacteria swim up to this rock and they form a culture on the surface of the rock. And they take whatever is to eat in the water and they pass the electrons to the rock, which then dissolves the mineral. Now you take away the rock and you put an electrode there and you charge the electrode so that it's exactly the same voltage potential as that rock was. The bacteria swim up to the electrode, they eat whatever you give them to eat, and they pass the electrons. Basically, they're using the electrode as an oxygen substitute, and they're respiring the electrode. Now, if you just put that in a device, you can feed the bacteria on one side of the fuel cell, and all the electrons go to the other side, where they interact with a catalyst and get oxidized by oxygen. I had a student from the engineering school, and she immediately saw this connection, and she developed the understanding of how the fuel cells work. And now she has her own company down in San Diego making these fuel cells to help clean human waste.
Yeah, that was the other part of this. It's not just that they can create electricity, they can also clean water.
Yes, that's right. If you imagine that bacteria can eat all these kind of nasty things that we call pollution, and that's what they do for a living. They eat almost any kind of organic material, including human wastewater. So they'll basically, in Oriana's fuel cells, in just a few days, she can get virtually all of the waste material out of wastewater and have it so that with just a small filtration, it'll be perfectly good for both irrigation and ultimately for drinking. And she's now marketing what she calls plug-and-play wastewater devices for use in outdoor toilets and all kinds of things like that. It's simple bacteriology in the sense that you can decide what it is that you want to design these fuel cells for. You can go isolate the bacteria that will do that. And then you can set up the fuel cell and get rid of whatever pollutant it is that you want to. So she has these now designed for human waste, for cattle waste, and for hog waste. Bacteria, all bacteria don't eat everything, but it really is just basic bacteriology. You have to find bacteria that can eat all the stuff you want and then get a good community of them on the electrode in the fuel cell. And then those bacteria basically form a biofilm that will take care of that human waste pretty much forever. We've had fuel cells growing on human waste in the lab for more than 3 or 4 years now. never seem to run out of energy because we keep, once they use up all the wastewater, the waste in the water, we give them another feeding. And it really works very, very well. Our experiments in my lab, of course, are about 100 milliliters in the fuel cell. And Oriana's are several thousand gallons now.
It's amazing that they can be used for all these things. I mean, human waste, bovine waste, those kinds of industrial wastes more generally. You know, you're continuing to search for new bacteria that are able to do these kinds of things. What other kinds of bacteria have you found, and what have they been able to do?
Well, I think we're just at the start of a very, very exciting field. I have been reading several review articles by different people around the world. When this was discovered, the word electric bacteria hadn't been invented. And to be honest, no one believed it at first. I can't say that I blame them. The really great thing that happens when you publish something that's a little bit controversial is everyone who doesn't believe it tries to repeat it and show you're wrong. And then when they repeat it and show you're right, they become your colleagues and they start working with you. And that's really what's happened. There are hundreds of people now around the world that are working on these electric bacteria and using them. I'll give one example. They're using them to remove pollutants like chromium, like uranium, selenium, arsenic. There are all sorts of bacteria that will remove the electrons from these various pollutants. And when you get the electrons from them, they become insoluble. They precipitate out of solution. This is one example of the things that good geochemists will look at these bacteria that can speed up these reactions by factors of thousands and design things to help them get rid of polluting things.
Yeah, that's really amazing. I mean, it does seem like the uses for these bacteria are really endless.
Yeah, I think it's really in the mind of the beholder. And that's why it's so good that so many young people are being exposed to this right now. I just look at the number of papers being published. It really makes me feel good. I say we've started something that really is, in its own way, going to change the world a little bit. And it's like so many things. First, it can't be true. Then, by golly, it is true. And then you say, well, I discovered it. And that's just fine. I'm happy to have them say that. Because the new uses for this really are being discovered by the young people who believe in it. So, you know, in my sense, this is how science should work.
Well, Dr. Ken Nielsen, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and for sharing your work.
Oh, I'm happy to do that. And what can I say? Spread the word.
Will do.
Dr. Ken Nielsen is a professor of Earth and Biological Sciences at the University of South California. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers, and he will be in Milwaukee to talk about his work tomorrow evening at the UWM Union. You can find more information at wuwm.com.